What we're going to do tonight is we're going to look at the purification process of someone who has tzaras. I'm not going to focus on that much and why they get tzaras. I'm sure some of us are aware of some of the different reasons why people get tzaras. I want to focus on the purification process, okay? And first, I'm going to look at the psukim. We're going to read the psukim together. I hope you can see the psukim pretty well here. I hope it's clear from the and it's in Perek Yudalit and Vayikra. We're going to read the psukim, and then we'll see some mefarshim, and we'll see Rav Hirsch, and we'll see where we go from there. So this is Mitzora by the Bereshit Moshe Lemar Zos Tia Torah Samitzora Biyom Taraso Vuhuva LaKohen. Again, we're talking about broad strokes, big themes here. So the Mitzora goes to the Kohen, V'yatza HaKohen al Mechutza Machna V'ral Kohen, V'inei Nirpa Negat Tzaras Min HaTzarua. So it turns out that the Kohen sees that now he is healed. V'tziva HaKohen V'lakach L'miter Shtei Tziporim Chayos Taros V'eitz Erez Ushti Tulas V'ezov. So now, here are the ingredients for the purification process. You got two birds, two live birds. You have a cedar branch, a hyssop branch. We got a thread of hyssop, thread of crimson and the hyssop. V'tziva HaKohen v'shachar etzipor ha'achas al kli cheres ha'man chayim. So the Kohen then shachs one of the two birds, and I guess over this earthenware kli, and there's water. So they shach the bird, and presumably some of the blood must drop into this earthenware receptacle that has water. So what do? Then you take the live bird. You have one bird that's dead already. You take the live bird together with the wood, all these other ingredients. You dip them all in the blood of the bird that was shechted over the water. And then, then you sprinkle it on the person seven times. And v'shilach hatzipor chayal p'nesed, and you send the live bird away. V'chibes ha mit. Okay, so that is, and then v'chibes ha mitaheres begadav v'gilach es kol sarov v'rochatz b'mayim v'taher. Okay, and then the one to be cleansed washes his clothes, he shaves off his hair, he goes to the mikvah, and then he's clean. So what you have here, you read these first eight psukim, and you have here this process of you taking all these ingredients, you're shechting one of the birds, and you create some kind of potion, and you sprinkle it on the guy. And then you think now that he is pure, he's good. So what can he do now once you do this? What is he allowed to do now? What is he allowed to do now?
He can get out of his house.
He can get out of his house, right. Now, he can join. Can he do everything yet or not? Is he good to go? He's completely fine?
No,
does
he have to go to the mikvah?
He went to the mikvah. No, he goes to the mikvah. What else do you have to do?
He hasn't brought his karbanos yet.
Right, so you haven't brought your karbanos yet. Usually speaking, what's interesting, Evan, what's interesting here is, right, he doesn't bring his karbanos. Under most circumstances, when someone, generally speaking, is like in some kind of impure state, okay, it's usually like a... It's usually like you go to you have a ritual process, and then let's say you bring a korban. So here it's interesting. You have this whole thing. You're doing shechita, and you do some sprinkling, and usually and it does like half a job here. It allows you to do what? It allows you. The pasuk says that it allows you v'achar yavo el hamachaneh. You're allowed to enter the camp, but you can't remain in your tent for 7 days. So this is like step one. Okay? So this is like step one as part of the process. So the first point I'm going to try to make here, maybe some of us are aware of this, is there are really two steps in the process, and I want to sort of make us aware that there are two steps, and then sort of analyze, you know, why we have two steps here. Okay? Like Evan pointed out, you need to be your carbono. So let's see. So first step, right? You got the sprinkling, you get that done. Now you wait 7 days. You're back in society, but you wait 7 days. And then we have a whole nother set of things that happen. And then after, on the seventh day, you shave all your hair. Again, you wash your clothing. And you go to the mikvah again. Uvayom hashmini, then on the eighth day, yikach shnei kvasim tmimi, v'kavsa achas bashna tmima, u'shlosh yasurim sos mincha, b'lo v'shem v'lo gichad shaman. Sounds like a korban. Or you're taking multiple korbanas, right? You're taking three animals, right? Three sheep. And plus, you also have some, what else besides the three sheep? What else? Some kind of oil. So there's going to be some kind of oil offering also. Okay? And you think that this is going to be just a set of, you know, essentially, you know, korbanos. But then, v'amir ha-kohen ha-metahera, so ish ha-metahera, v'osam, lifnei Hashem Pesach ha-omoy, the kohen, you know, stands the person before the Mishkan, v'lokach ha-kohen is ha-keves ha-achad, v'ikrev oso la-asham, so you got one animal that's an asham offering, v'sloga shaman, v'heinif osam tenufa lifnei Hashem, and we do some kind of weight tenufa, some kind of elevation offering. So you have an asham, you have this tenufa. V'shachar es hakeves v'makom bimkom sheyishchar es achatas v'sa'ola bimkom hakodesh. So now you have what? A chatas and an ola. So you got three. You got chatas, ola, and asham. And then you do something else. This is a little unusual. V'lokach ha-kohen, in Pasuk Yedav, v'lokach ha-kohen midam ha-asham v'nasar ha-kohen al tenuch ozen ha-mitaher yominis v'albon yedo yominis v'albon raglo yominis. And then what does he do? The kohen places blood on the person's, what is it, his ear, on his on one of his fingers, and one of his toes, right? So he does this kind of ritual. So what's interesting is usually, you have some kind of perhaps a ritual, or someone becomes tameh, he goes to the mikvah, right? And then he has to wait for the next day to bring karbanos. Here you have this kind of initial ritual, allows him to go back to camp, and then the next day, then you wait 7 days, and then after the 7 days, there's sort of like a double cleansing process here. You have a second set of, second cleansing process, and there on the eighth day, that's when he brings his karbanos, but you're also doing this other kind of ritual where you're just applying blood to the individual's whatever, ear, toe, thumb, and then you do some kind of oil process here also. He takes the oil and he dips, the kohen dips the you know, his finger, and he's sprinkling it on the person. So you sort of have this kind of process as well. Okay, so what is this second stage accomplish,
Rabbi? The second stage is not unique to the Metzora.
Yeah, good.
In Tetzaveh, when the Kohen Gadol got their initiation, they had the Log Shemen and the Bohen and all that.
Exactly. We're going to get to Evan. We're going to hold that thought to the end of this year. You're exactly correct. So that this is the only time Evan's point out is 100% correct. That this is like the only other time we find the Metzora is doing that. The only time we find this kind of, you know, dipping the blood of the ear and the thumb and the toe is what the initiation process of the Kohen. So we're gonna get back to that at the end. Very good. So
maybe it's like trying to tell you that it's like a process. When you try to get back, you can't jump into it. It's a process.
Right.
It's,
like, there seems to be two stages here. So we're trying to... You're 100%... Right.
Step by step, you can't jump.
Right. So before we get into... I think you're right. I think that's right. But before we get into sort of like, you know, an analysis, what does this second step allow you to do once you do that? In other words, what were you allowed to do after the first step that you're not allowed to do until you do the second step? Like now that you've finished the second step, what can you do now? Like, what can you do now after you bring all these carbonos? What can you do?
Just go back and everybody.
The first step, you're allowed to go into the machana. You're allowed, right? In other words. in after Pasuk Ches, after you've done this first step, you're allowed to go back to the camp, but you have to be outside your tent. And also, you can't go into the Mikdash. You can't go into the Mikdash. After the second step, you can go into the Mikdash. Okay? So with that in mind, what I want to do is, I want to look at Rashi, the Sefer Chinuch, Rav Hirsch, and then we'll get to Evan's point at the end. Okay, so again, the first step, you got two birds, you got cedar wood, scarlet thread, hyssop branch. So what do you think, what's the symbolism? What's the symbolism there?
Paraduma, it seems to be a little bit like the Paraduma.
It's a little bit like the Paraduma, right?
And also like the Seir Izim that you throw away.
The Seir Lazazel, right? It's a lot of it like the Seir Lazazel. You have one, it's a different Seir, but like you have, you know, one bird that flies away and one bird that stays, just like the two goats, one that goes away, right? There's something to that. The symbolism of Rashi is that, if you look at Rashi, so Rashi here says, Perek Yudal, Pasuk Dal. Everyone can see the source sheet, right? So the way Rashi explains is that, you know, Taharos, so why do you bring birds specifically? So this is the idea, Lefi Shenagayim Baim Alashon Hara, Shehu Maiseh Pitputei Dvarim. Because you know, there are different theories as to why you get the plague of Tzaraas. One of the more common theories that's brought down in the Gemara, the most popular one is the Lashon Hara one. Why is that, presumably? Why is that the most common theory?
It's outside of the mouth.
I understand, but more than that, why is that? The Gemara in Arachin has about seven different possibilities. I'm sorry?
The word Mitzvah.
Ah, very good. Okay, Mitzvah is Mitzvah. Yeah, that's very good. But there's another, the most, but who got Tzaraas in the Torah?
It was Miriam,
right? Miriam spoke Lashon Hara, so that's the most popular theory as to why you get Lashon Hara, why you get Nagam. Again, the Gemara and Erechin gives a whole bunch of reasons, but this is the most popular one. And again, it has good reason, like what Evan said, Motishevim, you know, Mitzvah, and also Miriam.
Moshe, when God told him to speak to Paro, and he said that the Bnei Israel wouldn't listen to him.
Right.
So his hand became a Sora from that too.
Right. You have to work, Herbie. You have to work a little harder for that. Because right, you know, you say he spoke Lashon Hara about the Bnei Israel. Right. That's what you said, right?
Right. And his hand turned a Sora.
In other words, he speaks Lashon Hara about them also. Right. So that's. That's right. It's a question why Moshe said that as a reflection of Bnei Israel, as a reflection on him not feeling worthy. But you're right, that's certainly possibility. There it's the hand, not the whole body. But yeah, that's correct as well. So Rashi says, so that's why you bring birds. Because birds, what do they do? They're always chattering. So since the birds are always chattering, so therefore, and since plagues come as a result of Lashon Hara, so that's why you bring birds as a form of, right, as a form of kapara, form of the purification process for the mitzora, and the eitz erez. So the cedar tree is the most powerful. Another theory that negaim come as a result of arrogance, gasus ruach. So why do you bring the shni tolas vezov? So these are the smallest, you know, type of things. Mata kanasav yisrape yashfil atzmo migavaso kitolas vechezov. You're like a talas, a worm. I mean, that's another word for that. And a zov is a hyssop branch. So again, the theory being, according to Rashi, based on Chazal, the two most popular reasons for tzaras are gossip and arrogance. The Sefer HaChinuch, in the first paragraph, I have here, Mitzvah Kuf Ayin Gimel, essentially says the same thing as Rashi. He cites Chazal. He says the same thing, that you have to humble yourself, and Tziporim is like because you're chattering like Lashon Hara. And then he writes in the second paragraph, Uvitam Hamayim Sheyitaru Kol Tamei. So why do you go to the mikvah? Achshov Al Tzad HaPshat. I think in a very simple reason. On a very simple reason, why do you do that? Kihu Ainyan Kadesh Yira Ha Adam is Atzmo Achar Hatvila Ki Ilu Hu Nivra Bosasha. So it's like he's creating, he's recreating himself on that moment. Kamosha Haya Olam Kulo Mayim Terem Heyos Ba'adam. Right? The Mabul is like, right? What's the Mabul? The Mabul is the flood where I didn't say this. I'm not exactly sure who said this. Maybe Rabbi Ari Khan may have said this, or maybe someone else did. But he said, what was the Mabul? The whole world went into the mikvah. Right? The whole world had a mikvah. Right? In other words, you're cleansing yourself. So when you, right, when you go into the mikvah, so you're sort of cleansing yourself. That's what the whole world is like, all water in for a new world. So the person's like cleansing himself. We go to the mikvah, so like we're saying, I'm a new person, and I'm sort of changing. It's hopefully symbolism that will hopefully help you in a way to obviously to change your ways. These are different steps. Obviously, if you don't feel that you're going to change, going to the mikvah may not be so effective. But hopefully, sometimes we do things that hopefully engender certain feelings, like, oh, like I'm a new person. And hopefully it works. Obviously, if you're just someone who just goes to the mikvah, the ritual, but you don't actually change your ways, so it's not really so effective. In any case, so that's sort of like what... What?
That could be also about the hair. Why he has to cut off all his hair? Because the hair, the hair represents an idea that you can cut it off and there's no pain when you cut it. So the guy thinks, I can't, I have to speak Lashon Hara. It's too pleasurable. I can't stop.
Right. You know?
So he says, all right, so just like your hair, you can cut it if you wish. That's a, you know, there's no pain. Yeah.
No pain.
Try it out.
Yeah, interesting.
It's not comparable.
Okay. Never thought of that. Okay, thank you. So that's right. So that's sort of the first step. And Rav Hirsch, though, but let's read Rav Hirsch a little bit. Rav Hirsch says, the way that he describes it, he says the following. He says, let's try to understand the actions that are described in Psukim Beis Teches, the first stage. The goal of the first step, the first stage, is to remove the mitzorah from his state of seclusion into society, to return him to society. Varayanot hamit batim b'masim eila mityachasim b'lo safek l'rayon ha-shutafut ha-chevratit. The ideas that are expressed in these actions that you do in this first step allows you to bring you back into society. Ki rak ha-shutafut ha-chevratit hutra lo ata. Because that's what's permitted now. After the first step, all you're allowed to do is go back to society. Hu horshalav ola machna Yisrael. You're allowed to go back into machna Yisrael. Ach bimei sifro odenu asur b'mikdash v'kadoshav. But you're not allowed back into the mikdash, into the temple area. That v'yesh lasod masim yuchadim. For that, you have to do special actions. B'term yurshal lachzor l'tchum ha-mikdash. Before you want to go into the mikdash, there you need to do other things. Emor me'ata, I would say from now. Ha-masim ha-mtuarim kam b'psukim beiz techet. Mevatim rak otan amitut. Hamalavot etshuvo l'chevra. The goal of the actions described in Psukim 2-8, beiz teches, express that truth that accompany you back to society. And then he goes on to explain all these things. He mentions the two birds, that they are similar in appearance, and he compares it to the two goats on Yom Kippur, right? And he explains the way he explains. I'm looking here. I don't know if you can see where my the thing here. It says Ofyan shal tziporim she'ena mekablim marut makbil leparaduma, as Baruch said, right? The birds that they don't. Birds basically are what? He said something different. We've said until now that birds like chattering, Lashon Hara. Rav Hirsch says that birds basically don't accept, what's marut? Rulership, right? They don't accept anyone to lord over them. And that's similar to the paraduma, a shelo ala ol. And that no burden was placed on a paraduma. And it's similar to egla rufa. It wasn't worked yet. And so the goal is, what's a tziporim? The birds are things that say, you know what, I don't need anyone. I don't need anyone to, the person who gossiped, or the person, Rav Hirsch doesn't focus as much on the gossip, but the person engaged in anti-societal behavior. I don't need anyone. I was like a bird. I don't need anyone. right? And that's when he explains that the Maim Chayim is the Kli Cheres is like of the Sota and of the Paraduma. But he says the Eitz Eren Shitulat Bezov. We also find these things. And, so he says here the Tziporira Dror. These birds are like Bilti Chevrati, not social. Ein Mekablim Marut, right? And that's what he says, that we have to shecht the bird. We have to sort of subdue your animal instinct and to accept, you know, society rules. You have to accept. And also the idea of the Eitz Erev and the Zov, they basically want that these are these represent the world of the living things. You have to cut down. The person thinks I'm so high and mighty, and you know, we have to cut you down to size, and you know, don't think you're so high and mighty, could do what you want. So Rav Hirsch sort of takes this and sort of says, you were excluded from society because you engage in anti-societal behavior. That's not to exclude Lashon Hara. Now, gossiping obviously can, you know, that can obviously lead to speech, as we know, has the power to, you know, polarize people, to cause people to, not bring people together, to divide people. So they're linked to each other. But Rav Hirsch says sort of the first step is on sort of bringing you back to society. Okay, that's what he has, this whole theory, basically. And essentially, he also talks about how the seven sprinklings that basically, you know, it warns someone who'd been condemned, basically you should make seven efforts to purify your conduct and once again be a member of society. And so he focuses the first aspect of the purification process to get you back into society. The second ceremony is your
Rabbi.
Yeah. Yes.
How does that explain that we say he's allowed back into society, but he's not allowed back with his family?
Right. That's a good question. So it seems to me that maybe the highest level of Kedusha is really, you know, with your wife, with your spouse. So it's probably still like life isn't as it should be. He, in a sense, I think the way I would understand it is he's allowed back with society as a whole, but there's still like a lack of, you know, kedusha in the mikdash. But maybe also, you know, there still is a. This is different than regular tuma and tahara because it's something that's internal, and maybe we need something even. He has to maybe refine himself even more to be back with his wife. Maybe that's what I haven't thought. You know, I have to think about that a little more. But that's what it seems to me.
Could you suggest that a husband and a wife spend a lot of time talking to each other, so there's a greater possibility of lashon hara with them than with outside people?
Right, but it seems that this has sort of. You know, allowed him to get back into, you know, that he's done that process in the first.
But he hasn't gone back home.
Right. It seems that maybe he has to do a higher level. That seems to be to go back home with your spouse. You need even a greater purification process. It seems.
Right. Maybe that's to keep him away from lashon hara. That ain't easier in the house than outside in the street.
Right. So then, what happens? The next step, right? What we saw, Yud Dalet to Yud Ches. One second. So the other thing. So we saw. Where do I have this? I have so many things open. So we saw in Yud Dalet to Yud Ches. Right. So here it is. Right. So we saw here. What are you doing? You have this kind of process, right? So there you have this kind of process here in Yud Dalet and Yud Ches, where you are placing the blood of an Asham offering and an oil putting on the person. And the question is, why did the Torah single out this mitzvah with respect to this strange ceremony? How is this tumah different than other types of individuals who need kapara? So as Evan pointed out immediately, that we are struck by the comparison to the inauguration of the Kohanim during their initiation process. And here it says, "V'shachates ha'ayav lakafta midamo." You take the blood. V'nasata al tenuch ozen Aaron val tenuch ozen banav hayamanis v'abon yonam hayamanis v'abon raglam hayamanis. So this in Shmos chav tes chav. So you're doing what you're doing to some extent with the mitzorah. You're doing it with the kohen, and in fact the this miluim with the kohen and the mitzorah are the only context in the Tanakh where the term, the word tenuch is used. And so what's the relationship? Seems to me the purpose of the Korban Miluim is to sanctify the Kohanim. By placing the blood of the Korban Miluim on the body of the Kohen, a metamorphosis takes place. Ordinary people become elevated and eligible for their role as ministers of the Mishkan. So how do we understand this parallel to the Mitzorah? Seems to me that regarding all other individuals who are mechusarei kapara, who are missing atonement, in other words, there are other individuals who become tameh. And what do you do if you become tameh? At some point, you have to go to the mikvah, then you bring a korban. How is this different? The source of tuba, of tzaras, doesn't come from something external. It comes from something from the inside, the person himself. Regarding tzaras, the tuma is inherent. The blemish is on the body of the individual. The body itself is tameh. You can claim that tuma is only skin deep, but the person himself is not affected. However, that's not what Chazal believe. It seems that Chazal, the fact that Chazal call a Mitzorah what? He said that Mitzorah is like he's a dead person. Right? A Mitzorah is considered like a dead person. It seems to suggest that there's some identification between the Tuma and the person himself. What does it mean a Mitzorah is like a mace? Because again, normally, when it comes to tuma, normally you touch a corpse and you become tame. But here, you yourself are the corpse, as it were. The tuma is internal. You are like the person, the dead person himself. So therefore, a change of status is not enough. You need to create a new identity. The person himself must change his identity and be elevated from tuma to tahara. It's not like you touch tuma, so now I need to go to the mikvah. You yourself are tameh, so now I have to change myself. So therefore, the process that was used to transform the Kohanim is applied to the Mitzorah as well. That's why we have two stages. Regarding the Kohanim, the transformation was from the mundane to the holy. Regarding the Mitzorah, we have one stage, which gets him back into society. But we need a second stage to change him from tameh to tahor, to once again connect with his wife, to once again connect with the mikdash. That's why I think this is different, the mitzvah is different than all other types of tuma in the process. We have a two-step process when it comes to the mitzvah. Okay?